Program Manager on Azure Site Recovery. Joining me in this session is Rohit.
Hi, I'm an architect with Microsoft Consulting Services India.
Cool, so Rohit and I are here to talk to you about how do you build an effective DR strategy with Azure Site Recovery. So how many of you, quick show of hands, how many of you have seen, did a POC with Azure Site Recovery before? Okay, few hands. What I'm hoping is by the next time we have an Azure conference, hopefully in Pune, all of you have tried or did a POC with Azure Site Recovery, because you can absolutely not ignore it as a service within Azure.
So why just a POC? Why don't we talk about it?
Real deployments is what I'm hoping, but I do want 100% involvement and understanding of what Azure Site Recovery is. So I know this is a chalk talk. We'll keep it very informal, but because we have a lot of folks who haven't seen Azure Site Recovery before, we'll run through a few conceptual understanding of what Azure Site Recovery can do for you. We also have a few demos lined up, so it will help you understand a few things better. So that's a quick agenda. We'll talk about why disaster recovery is important, why business continuity is important, why your organizations may actually not even have the right DR strategy in place. How can Azure Site Recovery help you? I know there was a lot of interest yesterday with the Infosys deployment for SharePoint deployment in Azure. So we actually have a cool demo. We're going to fail over an on-premises SharePoint farm to Azure using Azure Site Recovery. So hopefully that would be interesting. Rohit will then take over and he'll present some learnings from the field based on Azure Site Recovery deployments that he's helped with. And then we'll conclude the session. Anytime, have any questions, raise your hand and we'll take them. So is your business DR ready? A lot of you may possibly think that you have a disaster recovery strategy in place. And most people think of DR as there's going to be a hurricane or there's going to be an earthquake. Reality is disasters happen in a much more normal way, not God-induced, but man-induced. For example, data center fires, power outages, your internet service provider goes down. On an average, most organizations see 3 disruptions a year. Each disruption may last up to 2 hours, cost you almost $700,000 per disruption. That's over $2 million annually because of your line of business apps, your tier one apps not being available. Be it a Fortune 50 or a small organization, you just cannot afford that kind of loss of reputation, loss of business. So what do most people do? They go ahead and build a DR data center. Building a data center is expensive. As you've heard yesterday in the keynote and a lot of sessions, Azure is your hyperscale cloud. The kind of cost economics that you can achieve with Azure, you cannot achieve in your own data centers. Why spend that $20 million, keep it on your load up your CapEx and OpEx running a data center when you can use Azure? Azure Site Recovery lets you use Azure First Class as your DR destination. So I'm sure all of you have various business continuity challenges. Microsoft likes to think that there are 6 key. I want you to focus on only 2. The first one, we are all evolving as consumers of information technology. So we have on-premises applications. We have applications that are going hybrid. We have deployments that have moved to the cloud, that's migration. We also have born in the cloud apps. You need DR for all of them. You obviously cannot have multiple DR solutions. You need one solution which is future-proof and it would work across all heterogeneous infrastructure choices that you may make. The other thing is, if you have a DR strategy, but if you've not tested it, there is no guarantee that it will work in a disaster. Most disaster recovery solutions fail because they are not tested. And that's why we believe that automation is the key and testability is very, very important. And within Azure Site Recovery, those are the 2 very strong premises that we've built the solution based on. So across the Microsoft stack, and this is just a primer, if it's too much information, we can skip it. But there is various levels of high availability and resilience built into the Microsoft stack itself. So for example, if you have Hyper-V nodes, I'm sure a few of you have tried failover clustering on the Hyper-V level. That gives you high availability from a compute failover perspective. Within the guest, you have concepts such as guest clustering that makes your application running in the guest a little bit more resilient with guest clusters. You have the ability to do simplified backups using Windows Server Backup. Folks may have used Data Protection Manager, which offers a nifty way to do centralized backup and things such as item level recovery for popular workloads. All of our scenarios tie up very nicely into Azure Backup to provide a cloud integrated backup story. But this is the key point that I want you to take away from this session for folks who have not seen Azure Site Recovery before. It doesn't matter if you use Hyper-V or VMware or you're still running physical workloads. It doesn't matter if you want to do DR between your own data centers or DR to Microsoft Azure. There is only one DR solution from Microsoft, and that's called Azure Site Recovery. So that's a lot of information there. So let's see what all Azure Site Recovery can do for you. If you have two Hyper-V data centers, you already built a DR data center, and you probably want to keep it running. That's fine. You can do DR between them using Azure Site Recovery. We support things like array-based replication, so SAN arrays can be used. We support Hyper-V replica. We support SQL Always On and other things. If you want to do a disaster recovery between two VMware-based sites or physical workloads, that also can be done with Azure Site Recovery. But if you want to actually fail over directly to Azure, which is the killer thing that we're hoping a lot of customers will start seeing value from, Hyper-V sites going to Azure, your regional branch offices, your remote store locations running workloads going to Azure, and as soon as next week, we'll allow VMware workloads to directly fail over into Azure using Azure Site Recovery. This is very cool. So physical and VMware workloads will now go to Azure using Azure Site Recovery as soon as next week. So that's the primer is set. Let's actually see some of this in action. So I know folks wanted to see how, during the Infosys session, for disaster recovery of the SharePoint farm, Azure Site Recovery was mentioned as currently in testing. So I have a test version of a failover. So I'm going to also show you what Azure Site Recovery looks like. So Azure Site Recovery is a service within the Azure portal. So that's your familiar Azure portal. It's one of the blades on the left. It's called Recovery Services. Within Recovery Services, you get Azure Backup or Azure Site Recovery. If you've set up your Azure Site Recovery, that's what the system is basically going to tell you. How many virtual machines are currently protected from on-premises to on-premises? How many of the virtual machines have been protected to Azure? Which means these virtual machines are constantly replicating to Azure and are getting saved in a blob storage in your own subscription. When the time comes where you actually need to do a failover because on-premises is down, you can do a one-click failover, and we'll convert the blob storage into disks and start up Azure IaaS VMs for you, and your application will then start running within Azure. So actually, let's see what a protected application looks like. So we define an application as a protection group. So think of a protection group as a workload. So I have a few workloads that are currently under protection. So I have an Exchange workload or a Dynamics workload and a SharePoint workload. The SharePoint workload is what I want to actually talk about. Within SharePoint, I have a few VMs that are getting replicated through Azure Site Recovery. The database is actually getting replicated through SQL Always On availability clusters. One of the remote replica is actually running in an Azure IaaS VM. I have an app VM, and I have a web front end. They're currently in a protected state. So from on-premises, they're replicating to Azure. All of this replication can be enabled when you enable the virtual machine in Azure. So you don't have to do anything special. You just install the agent on the Hyper-V host, and the virtual machine starts getting protected. If you actually dig into the virtual machine, you will also see all the cool smarts we've enabled. So we can figure out that your on-premises virtual machine, based on the size and the type that it was, it should map into an A3 type virtual machine in Azure. You have the ability to specify which network in Azure do you want your virtual machine to connect to based on how you've configured networking. So I have a site-to-site VPN configured. I also need my virtual machine to connect to Azure network. I'm also using a traffic manager for an actual DNS, Azure traffic manager for an actual DNS switch post failover. All of that can be configured within Azure, and it can be made to work with Azure Site Recovery. So this is the post failover profile for my virtual machine. Now that I've done that, all I need to do is use the recovery plans framework within Azure Site Recovery and specify what my failover should actually do. Now, this was a three-tier application running in three virtual machines. From your organizations, I'm sure you know that an actual deployment would be perhaps maybe 15 to 20 virtual machine farm. You cannot really remember which virtual machine to fail over, what script to execute, what manual action to execute. That's where disaster recovery fails, because it's not automated and it's not made to work in a coherent unit. Our DR strategy solution is a recovery plan. What the recovery plan lets you do is specify what virtual machines should fail over as part of that application's failover, in which order should they fail over if the failover were to happen, what kind of scripts do I need to execute as part of the failover. So for example, when I'm failing over, I need my web tier to become available on port 80, and that all Azure automation script needs to be executed to make that kind of check. So from within our recovery plan, I can actually call an Azure automation script, which is going to make sure that port 800 and port 80 get actually opened for the SharePoint farm to actually fail over. Now, once I have created this recovery plan one time when setting up my disaster recovery, in the time of disaster, all I need to do is come to this recovery plan and say failover. Everything that you've decided as your steps for the DR, your networking consideration, your scripts, your manual actions, will get executed in the exact same order every single time, so that way there are no errors. Gentlemen in the back.
For example, if I have two enterprise agreements with me, where I've paid $100 in each of them, and one of the plans that I'm having when I'm hosting the machine is switched off for some reason, maybe my the $100 that I had, if I've only consumed. So on the other subscription, can I fail over this thing so that I make sure that the other subscription which has $100 still available can use
So when you're actually enabling protection, you get to specify a storage account in a subscription that you want the protection to happen. So if you have credit in a particular subscription, you will just tie your on-premise artifact to talk to that subscription. So you can basically pick which subscription do you want to go to and use the credit in that subscription.
My question is like Azure to Azure, does it work? I have one Azure subscription, I want to switch my machines from this subscription to the other subscription. Can it work?
You want to do a failover from one Azure subscription to the Azure? That's a functionality that we're currently working on. Right now we're doing on-premises to Azure, a hybrid kind of setup, going from on-premises to one Azure subscription. But what we're investigating right now is if people want to do a migration or a failover from one subscription to the other. So that's currently under evaluation.
What is the end user's experience, I mean, when the failover happens to this high?
We will see this, that in this.
Yeah, this is...
I mean, is there any downtime or like manual configuration?
Sure. So it's high availability. It's not high availability. High availability usually means a switch happens right away. DR usually comes with a kind of RTO. Our recovery time objective or a time to failover is within minutes. So within minutes, because if you're doing a planned failover, so there are three variations of failover, and let me actually show you also. When you do a planned failover, you do it in a situation where you expect a disaster to happen, but it hasn't happened yet. Meaning your data center ISP is going to take a 4-day downtime for whatever reason, and it's going to start tomorrow. So you need to do a failover today. In that case, you're required to do a graceful shutdown so that all last data is replicated to Azure. In that case, there will be a downtime of a few minutes.
In a small scenario, let's say, I mean, how the clients would connect to my server?
Through the exact same URL. So if you've configured Azure Traffic Manager, the Azure Traffic Manager will switch the connection over.
For external, external users are coming from internet. What about the on-premise?
For that, you also still need to look at your weighted DNS records on your corporate DNS server. So you can configure it in round robin and make sure the...
For example, in a building, I mean, 1,000 users are there. On the top floor, there was a data center. Obviously, replica is on Azure. Let's say something happened, like it got burned, and then like 900 users, you know, were connected. How come they will connect directly to the...
So, and that depends on how your traffic switches, right? So when your 10th floor blows up because of a fire, God forbid, you actually, if your entire networking fails over, then because you've done the mapping of your...
plan has to be connected to the Azure.
Yes,
network.
Yes. So, and we can do it via site-to-site VPN. So it will go through the networking that you can set up. It can also go through express route if you've set it up according to that.
Or it could be the third option as well. Every customer will have a WAN link or an internet link. If my WAN is down, I can still fall back to my internet link.
Is there, but yeah. I need to consider all those are connected, I mean, post disaster.
Absolutely. Yes. It depends on, so what we call that as a partial site failover of a full site failover. Mm. If you expect some portions of your site to go down, but your primary networking to be still available on-prem, then your site-to-site VPN would still route networking requests through your on-premise network. But if you expect the primary network also to go down, you would switch to a secondary backup network, which will directly hit the Azure endpoint.
Yeah. What is the RTO? I mean,
RTO is actually within minutes for the actual failover. It also depends if you're using a public DNS, then the time to live that is configured on that public DNS. So in Azure Traffic Manager, in my demo, I've set it to 30 seconds. So my traffic switch also happens very quickly. But it depends on how your ISP is behaving. But the actual failover, because we are doing ongoing data replication, the time required to do a failover is just the time required to turn on an Azure virtual machine. all data is continuously replicated.
The whole concept is same like Hyper-V replica, right?
It's actually Hyper-V replica to Azure. Yes.
But we can configure lag and all?
I'm sorry?
Lag in the sense,
how often do you configure? Yeah. Yes, so you can go as low as 30 seconds, as high as 30 minutes of frequency of replication. The copy frequency that you
call.
Depends on your network.
Yeah.
That depends on your network to Azure.
For example, 500 milliseconds or...
No, that, I'm saying that depends on the network that you have configured to Azure.
There must be some best practice, right, perspective.
So we have a few tools, and Rohit will actually talk about how we can do a capacity planning before you're getting ready to protect your data center.
We need to educate customers that, okay, if you're saying if you want a data real-time within that lag time available. So data, if it is not replicating, some high latency or whatever.
So we'll showcase that.
As
an ISP?
Yeah.
No, we'll actually show how to do that. And then we also have alerting and indications built in that you assume that it will happen every 30 seconds. But if it's getting violated, we have alerting already built in, which will tell you that we are not able to keep up with your copy frequency because of a network issue or
and
anything.
What about the fail back?
It works exactly the same.
Okay.
So we let you fail back on premises too.
The organization, like, they have a habit to say, they want to.
Yeah, so we also talk about DR drills as we...
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, and actually, let me get to that.
Yeah.
I'll take more questions as we get through this demo. So if you remember when I was talking about it, I said that unless you test your DR strategy, it means absolutely nothing. It's like having insurance with an insurance agent that you don't trust. So a test failover lets you do exactly that. What the test failover will let you do is it will let you failover without turning off your primary side workload or disrupting it. So a new test virtual machine will get started in Azure. You have the ability to put it in an Azure isolated network, try out everything works fine, and then say test complete. All the artifacts will get cleaned up by Azure Site Recovery.
Everything would be isolated.
Everything is isolated. You get to pick which network you want to put it in.
How would the accessibility of that?
It depends on how you've configured connectivity to that network.
S2S VPN, or you want to come via...
So you'll have to have two separate connectivity going in from maybe like an isolated on-premise network that's able to talk to the test network, verify everything is fine, clean it up.
Yes.
I mean, that's how you want to do test, right? You don't want to do test in a production environment. It will be split brain situation. You'll be hitting two endpoints which are actually servicing the same workload.
Good question.
Perfect thought process, and that's exactly what we want our customers to do. Pick an Azure test network instead of the Azure real network when doing the test failover. Folks may have also realized this is a great way to not just do DR, but also do dev test labs. So if you're pushing new code, do a test failover, push it on the test setup, make sure new code works okay, move to production.
I think we'll kick this off and we'll take a question.
I'm actually going to kick off the failover so that it actually hopefully completes. So this is a SharePoint site. It's just an ASR team website, Azure Site Recovery team website. I have a schedule there. It's currently running on premises. On the SharePoint recovery plan, all I have to do is say failover. I'm going to do a planned failover, meaning I'll gracefully shut down the primary side. If I do an unplanned failover, we will not even wait to clean up the primary. This is assuming sky is falling, there's already a fire, directly proceed to Azure without even worrying about breaching the primary side. So I do planned failover. It lets me confirm that I'm failing over from the SharePoint server to Microsoft Azure. I say yes. When the job kicks off, you'll actually have a detailed job that tells you everything that's part of the failover. The planned failover has, if you see, has already kicked off, and it will tell me everything that's going to happen as part of the failover, right from the virtual machines getting shut down, new virtual machines getting started, final delta replication, and things like that. So we'll wait for that to complete, and hopefully it will complete in time if internet behaves. So this is the topology, basically, that we failed over. We had a SQL always-on availability group in the background, and we had ASR replication for my front end, for my app tier. All of that is failing over to Azure using Azure Site Recovery right now. And this is not just a tested solution for SharePoint. We're testing multiple workloads. We're testing Exchange. So when Exchange actually gets supported on Azure from the Exchange product team, we'll be able to fail over Exchange as well. We're also doing non-Microsoft workloads like SAP, Oracle. So we're testing and certifying with various product teams inside and outside to make sure that ASR is a recommended solution for all of those. I'm done with my part. I can take a few questions. I saw, sir, you had a question?
So when you said Exchange, I mean, VM level you are saying replica or what is that?
Yes, exchange? This is all VM level replica.
But exchange licensing isn't supported on Azure, right?
And that's a good question. So with DR, the way licensing works, and your account managers can help you understand that better. With DR, we have provisions in a lot of cases where there is license mobility with Azure Site Recovery, meaning your on-premises license can be used while you're running in Azure for the purpose of a disaster recovery. But those are contractual details that account managers would have to work through. And that consideration comes on an account-to-account basis, that how long can you run in Azure in the DR scenario and license will be mobile.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sir, in the back. You, sir.
I set up a DR scenario and site is all my on-premises replicated into my Windows Azure. Now, is there any automation? Let's say my on-premises goes down for some reason, I'm not there on-site. Is there any automation that automatically knows
so
detects it?
So, best practice, and this is a Microsoft guidance, is that you should never kick off DR on your own and automatically, because you know, if you're relying on a heartbeat mechanism, it may actually be false in a lot of different cases. So you obviously don't want to start DR for a false alarm.
Right.
That said, we do have full extensibility via PowerShell. If you want to write your own PowerShell through your own portal, which automatically kicks off the DR based on heartbeat, you can do right. You can
it's
go
a
ahead.
Manual interview.
Yeah.
We recommend that a failover should always be manual.
And there could be various scenarios. I work with customers on field, right? It could be like my WAN router is down or my internet router is down. And it is just maybe rebooting, so why you want to initiate a DR for that particular downtime? So you have to kick in manually. PowerShell is the way if you want to automate it, but we will not recommend doing that. Other way of monitoring could be through SCOM. SCOM can also give
absolutely.
You a
monitor. I mean, you can do it in response to anything automatically, but it's one click. It can actually happen. Be done through a Windows phone or an iOS device. So long as you can open the Azure portal, you can go and click failover. I can do it from my phone. We always recommend that a failover should be an informed decision that's executed, not automated.
Yeah.
Sir, in the back.
One last point on that part would be, DR as a strategy as a whole, just keeping ASR also at the back, what I've seen in fields, customer would have they will not have an as-is deployment for their primary site. They will have a kind of a conservative deployment in DR. I'm just talking DR as a strategy as a whole. So if you want to take in that as an automated thing, would you like to put your entire load on a conservative deployment? That's also you need to think. So DR, you need to plan it properly. Hence, the field thing that we'll talk about.
Yes, absolutely.
Is there
references?
Critical application which is hosted. Is there any preferences I can give? This should be first, and then is there any preference?
So each application can. So that's the DR strategy. That's the recovery plan. If you saw, I had like 8 or 9 different recovery plans. You can actually execute them in any order that you want. What you can also do is you can create a composite recovery plan of your entire data center. If you don't care to failover SharePoint separately or some 3-tier app separately, you create one big recovery plan. But if you want to order things and execute them in your fashion, we recommend doing an app level recovery plan.
Yeah.
Sir, in the back.
I think let's take this question.
Yeah, okay.
For the DR, what would be the costing like for the active and the passive, the DR which is there?
Right.
What would be the infrastructure costing? Would it be the 100% of, or is it in the, since it is in the, not a fully active?
It all depends upon the way that you have designed the app and who are accessing the app. So for example, it's an LOB app. Probably I'll have my DR as is as what I have in production. So the infrastructure cost will be the same. As
if it is the same, then why would I consider the DR and waste my resources instead of maintaining active in the round robin, the load balancing, everything happens. And like your Oracle charges for 100% for the DR also. So then I'll go for load balancing. Then my application or my site is never down. I may
Use you have a sufficient WAN link between your two sites,
that's correct,
which can maintain an active link.
Yeah.
That's not theoretically possible beyond 370.
And just imagine a scenario when you are saying load balancing, let's say theoretically it is 50-50. But if my one site is down, the 100% of the load will go. So you have made an adequate or over investment on each of the sites as well.
But
so there could be that combination.
And we don't.
But anyways, passive site you are charging fully. The licensing is done fully.
No.
That's what I was explaining. So
not only for SQL.
Let me explain.
I'll
get your question.
Yeah.
So there are two models, right? If you're doing from one data center to your own other data center, you'll have infrastructure cost in building that data center. That's why, to avoid that infrastructure cost, we say failover to Azure. Only during the time that you're running in Azure, you will incur a consumption charge in Azure. That's your cost on the infrastructure piece. In terms of licensing, for DR, we have license mobility in place for most workloads, wherein you don't need two versions of the license. Because the DR side, the application is not running till the time the DR happens, the license can be mobile.
There are providers like what can charge 100% for the DR also.
I think in based on the workload, what kind of license mobility is in place with Microsoft Azure and the vendor? In a lot of, at least in a lot of Microsoft workload cases, we have license mobility in the works for most of them.
So it is a more compelling reason to come to SQL than Oracle, right?
Absolutely.
How about the failback?
Sorry.
You see, the failback is well defined.
It actually is. So. Yeah. When I failed over, you saw that it said failover from SharePoint to Microsoft Azure. Under that, there was an option change direction.
Yeah.
If I was failing over, so now that the farm has failed over, once it completes the failover, when I do the failover next time, the system will already tell me. All I need to do is click failover. It will tell me I'm coming from Microsoft Azure to SharePoint. It is the exact same experience, just the direction is reversed.
Yes. See, data replication has to finish because now I was using the Azure for doing my production workload. Mm. And now there is a lot of data that has changed and which is lying in the Azure cloud.
Right.
And then if consider that for one week my local data center was down,
right.
I have 1 week of production data sitting in
Absolutely.
Azure.
Right. Absolutely.
How is that taking
so
care?
If you're doing in the Azure case, we take the data replication for failback at the time of failback. So we have two options wherein you can minimize the downtime or minimize the synchronization, meaning we can start bringing up the workload with partial data and synchronize it as it comes up, or we can let full synchronization happen and then bring up the workload. That's a choice that you get to make at the time of failback. It gives you a radio button which lets you do that.
Yeah.
Because consider a SharePoint kind of an application, the SQL server, the backend server and the frontend server, they have to be in synchronization. Otherwise, you know, the sites will not come up, the documents will not get.
So it depends on how stateless your tiers are. So if they are technically, you're right. So if everything is replicating at 30 seconds, they may still not replicate at the same point in time. With the VMware scenario that's launching next week, multi-VM is already available. If you're doing between two data centers, array-based replication, multi-VM is already supported. In Hyper-V replica, currently multi-VM consistency is not supported. That said, it is part of Windows Server threshold, which is coming in June, rather October timeframe, whenever it's coming. There you can actually configure that I want these to replicate consistently across various virtual machines, and it will make sure that they are all snapshotted at the same time.
Yeah, I think there was a question we asked.
It's kind of answered. So my question is, from a pricing perspective, you're paying per VM, right? I mean,
yes.
And
yes.
You pay for that VM even if you're not using it in a DR scenario, or are you paying only for storage or something?
No, the DR license you would continue to pay. Based on your enterprise agreement level, it may be different. Mm. The pay-as-you-go pricing is on the Azure website based on every geography. During the time of a failover, you would pay additional charge for Azure compute, however long you run the actual failover.
That's correct.
So when you're not using DR services, you're not going to pay for that compute?
Not for compute,
not
you'll
for the
pay
compute.
For storage. So whatever data is replicating, it's replicating in your storage account, you'll get a storage.
So this is another question on that. You had 30 seconds or 30 minutes as a minimum and maximum.
Right.
So do you also pay for the data transfer whenever that happens, depending on how you configure
it? No. So Azure storage by itself has some kind of ingress and egress logics on how many storage transactions are supported. Our license includes a whole bunch of free quota. So when you protect one virtual machine, 100 GB of Azure storage comes free with it. Also, a whole number of data transactions, I believe it's 100,000. I don't know the exact number. Don't quote me.
Yeah.
And if during the failover also if there's storage IOPS, a whole bunch is already included in that charge. But your network is what your ISP will charge you.
Yeah.
Sir.
One question. Yeah. Regarding, you said WAN links cost, so definitely I'll have to incur some cost. What about the compression, like FI or those kind of things? Because I want to minimize my WAN link.
Yes.
Okay, I want to have certain compression mechanisms in which I would be able to into X the traffic, like your documents are going there. If I use kind of better compression tools, hardware or software, then into multiply of 8X, 4X, I can do and use minimum bandwidth because it will be across continents.
Right. If I remember it right, we have a white paper on Steelhead,
so,
right?
Yeah. So and not just that. So we support things like Express Route in terms of better bandwidth. But compression is also, when Hyper-V replica replicates a disk, it does not replicate. So if it's a 100 GB disk, it will not replicate all 100 GB. It will replicate only the blocks that are utilized. And on a change basis, it will replicate efficiently, meaning it will not replicate the whole block. It will only replicate logs that have had actually had the change.
Yeah, that's true, but what about also compression also gives you
in a site efficiency. Yes, and between two sites, compression is supported. So when you protect, you can actually say compress.
Yes.
Going into Azure, Hyper-V replicas, inbuilt compression and smart replication come into play.
Do you need some devices, hardware devices?
No, you don't need to do anything.
No.
If you want additional network compression, you can also put a Riverbed appliance in between. We work with that also.
Yeah, and there's a white paper published for that too.
Yes.
Oh. Yeah, there's a question.
The question is, if data got corrupted on the primary side, how do you protect the data? How do you do the disaster recovery?
That's a fantastic question. This is not backup.
Yeah.
These are not point in time backups. High availability is different from disaster recovery. It's different from backup. Nowhere do we say that you replace an existing solution.
Yeah.
Item level recovery, DPM, cloud integrated backup, point in time backups, Azure backup.
Yeah.
What disaster recovery is that you assume that the latest state is the accurate state and you want to restore to that state. So if you had an oops delete or a data corruption, that would also sadly get replicated.
ASR support snapshots?
Yes, but, and that's a fantastic, I want to coming exactly to that. We do support PITs, up to 24 hour of recovery history. Then you can specify after a failover that I know the latest point in time is messed up. I will pick a 16 hour back point in time. You can change the PIT after the failover. But I do want you to realize that a 24-hour window, if your corruption was longer running, or if you had a situation which was longer, you do need to go to your backup to restore that backup.
Right.
So don't think of DR retention window replacing your backup, because backup requirements are much longer, in some cases 99 years. DR does not do that.
Right.
So we should let Rohit continue with his field learnings.
Sure. I think folks who attended my session yesterday, I did emphasize that any engagement that we work on, and I think most of you would be architects or consultants, right? Planning phase is critical. When we look at such ASR deployments, I'm sharing my experience, we go through a rigorous planning exercise, and a planning exercise for this ASR-based deployment will have some inputs that you can leverage as you go on. These are your takeaways. So there could be scenarios wherein you are configuring it between your data centers, or it could be a scenario wherein it's going from data center to Azure. Some tools that we have that I'll showcase as we talk about. For your on-premise management, Virtual Machine Manager is your single pane of glass, managing your Hyper-V or the VMware environment. I'm sure some of you have done WAF deployments as well for your private cloud needs. There are key planning things that you should look for. I'll be sharing a checklist as well in the next slide. But key things, how do I plan my network? The bandwidth, what I need in terms of my bandwidth, what kind of workloads that we support in terms of protection. There was a snap that was presented in the previous slide too. In terms of planning for capacity, we have a Envisional Planner. I call it Envision Planner, because as I speak to a customer, this is my experience of speaking to many customers in India. We get information in piecemeal, so I'm sure you will empathize with me on that. But it's a good checklist. You speak to your customer, get some data. Some of the data inputs that we get are sometimes mere perceptions. I know this would be the calculation on that particular object, but actually when we do an analysis through a tool, it comes out something else. So it's good to go with a manual interview, and then it's also good to run through a tool. We have a spreadsheet for getting data. We have a capacity planner spreadsheet, which is also a manual interview thing. And we have a Hyper-V replica capacity planner tool, which gives information on what bandwidth you need. Another important thing I would like to talk about, be clear what you want in terms of DR. Have that conversation with the customer. RTO, RPO conversation, and that is very critical. And the firewall configurations, network configuration. So this is just a snippet. When it comes to Virtual Machine Manager, there is a version that we support, 2012 and above. There are some scenarios that are mentioned. Host version also for Hyper-V 2012 and above. Network connectivity is the biggest question I hear. When I am managing my two data center scenario, okay, question.
No, I mean, I heard SCVM is no longer necessary for
this. It's very tricky question. So it depends on if SCVM system center is part of your deployment choice or not. You can do both. You can do both. So if you have a branch office that's just a Hyper-V workload or a VMware workload, you can directly protect that.
So as you onboard ASR on the portal itself, you will see those choices.
There are five choices now. So you can pick with VMM or without VMM.
Okay, going back to the critical question that I get from the customer, how should I plan my network firewall configurations? If it's an on-premise to on-premise DR that we are doing, it's only the SCVMM, which will need outbound 443 connection to Azure, because Azure is the guy who's doing an orchestration between the DR happening between on-premise. If it's a setup wherein I'm taking my content from on-prem to Azure, your host would also need a connection to Azure. We need outbound ports 443 to go to Azure. Another important thing, the first scenario, I'm assuming the data center application traffic is already open between the two on-premise data centers. That is also a key planning thing for network connectivity between two data centers. Infrastructure planning, how do we do that is the question. What I usually do, I start with the map exercise. It really helps. Folks who have seen the demo yesterday, I did talk about the 9.2x version, which is out. It gives a planner around how do you do Azure VM size planning. You do a scan of your environment, and then you get a graphical output, which can be presented to your management if you are speaking and doing it internally, or to your customer. So let's do a quick demo on that.
One concern about here is that the host version that we are supporting is only 2012 and above, but there are legacy applications that may have been running on 2008 or 2008 R2. That means we are not supporting them.
You want to take that?
Yeah, go ahead.
So in some cases, it depends on what Azure. So in terms of guest OSs, we support everything that Azure supports. You're right. In terms of host OSs, the support is limited to 2012 and above. However, based on what market data we get and what kind of information consultants and customer representatives bring to us, we are expanding our ability to go back, in some cases, 2008 and maybe even lower than that.
The question on that, is there only Linux workloads for?
Yeah, so it doesn't matter what the workload is running inside the guest. If the guest is supported in Azure, we can fill that.
Yes. Quick question on the network connectivity part. You told it's plain HTTP-based connectivity. What if I have SQS VPN or Express Road? Will you take advantage of that?
Yeah, you can. Yeah. You can.
OK, if I have an site-to-site VPN, the replica traffic will flow through.
Yes. Cool.
Absolutely.
OK, one last question, then we'll do a quick demo.
I see a lot of Windows being getting, so I wanted to know like how it will be when we have some DMZ, so how will that be replicated? Because I do not want that everyone should be, I still want it to be secure. So I've created DMZ in my local environment. Can that also be replicated somehow, or is there a possibility with that?
See, it's all about how do you configure your connectivity to Azure or the scenario that you have at hand. It's possible. I can have a VM sitting on my Hyper-V host, which is also a part of the DMZ. And it could be a two-leg DMZ as well. So possible. It's possible. How you have a defined network topology, definitely it's possible.
So what your question is probably whether we support creating a DMZ on Azure network itself.
Okay. So I'll take that question as a field person first. Multi-nic VM is supported, but do we suggest going with full-blown DMZ in Azure? I think DMZ has a lot of package behind it. You need to have ACL, SLU rules, logging. A lot of stuff have to be there. So if I have to consult and advise a customer, I would say just wait for a little bit more, and you'll get it there. Right now, multi-nic VMs are there. But just wait a little bit more so that you can get logging and auditing as well. And you can get a full-blown DMZ capability in Azure.
Because yesterday it was shared that, yes, we can restrict the traffic to be like the Azure computer can only be accessed from one particular computer.
Yes. That's what we call network security group, right? So my comment is on logging and auditing. You can do that, but can you audit? A simple question from your security team will be, can you give me an audit log? So that's why I think just wait a little bit more. It's almost there. And you can then make it like a full-blown DMZ. Yeah, you can do Barracuda WAF firewall as well, if you are okay with going with Barracuda as a VM there. But still, I would suggest wait a little bit more, and you'll be there. Okay, so going back to the demo, I'm sure we have some time. Quick thing, folks who didn't see the demo, I'll just take a question. Just give me a minute. Map tool, I'll not run it. Just to show you the latest one, you can collect your inventory data, performance data. Any planning exercise has to start with map. Another thing we talked about was the Hyper-V replica capacity planner. It's a free download that is available. Please use that. I'll just launch it. You can define the collection interval. I'll just go with 1 minute for the sake of the demo. I'll specify the host that I have in my lab. I'll just say skip involving the replica site. And it'll give me a message that it's getting the list of VMs from the environment. And I can see it has enumerated the host that I have in my setup. Let me just select one of it. And then it'll say for a capacity planning process, it'll create a temporary VM. And I'll click on next. And it'll let it happen in the background. For the sake of just walking through the report, it was run prior to this demo. You can see the detailed output that comes out of the report. It gives an information on how the environment would behave. Let's just go to some specific sections in the report. Look at the IOPS calculation. The VM write IOPS after enabling the replication, and when we have multiple recovery points, it gives you that information too. And during the initial replication, what would be the number of IOPS I would need? And also, it'll talk about the average VM write IOPS, IOPS replica. You have memory information, CPU information, before and after. So it could give you a good insight on what you need to plan. I think that was a common ask that I heard in some of the...
This tool should be run only when your servers are in production and having your peak.
Absolutely.
Yes, yes.
That's why you get to specify the time during which you want to run the test and for how long.
Yeah.
We ran it for a minute. You could run it for a few hours and get the full report. Take a decision in terms of how do you want to plan your CPU storage and stuff like that.
Right. Another thing I wanted to show. Can I use your machine?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I did talk about an envisioning thing. So this is an kind of a manual interview.
It's open in the Excel.
It's there. Okay, sorry. Yeah, sorry. So it's like a manual interview. When I would start a conversation with the customer, I will start with this. At least I'll get the information. Then I'll fall back to the map tool and the capacity tool. But it really helps to get an insight on what environment they have. And then it can be validated. Another thing, I showed you the capacity planner tool. Is a capacity planner manual interview worksheet as well. Just for reference, but we more rely on the statistical data that the planner tool will give. Okay.
We can take this manual input and put it in that tool and make a result.
No, this sheet can't be imported as an input to the capacity planner. But why won't you do that? If you remember the tool, I showed you, it was just 7 steps. It'll not take you much time in running this. Yeah, this is required when a customer would say, "I will not let you run something in my environment." Yeah. Yeah, it happens, right? Maps. I've been told many a time, sorry, sir, we can't run map. So
apart from application replication, wouldn't you have to care about the security aspect of it? What I'm talking about is the Active Directory authentication.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of the users who use the application, they are authenticated by one of the other Active Directory, directory services. So
that's correct.
If your private site is down, wouldn't you have to think about this already in place?
Yes. So I think we had a diagram.
So we basically recommend that if you expect your infrastructure services to go down completely, you should also replicate your Active Directory to Azure and authenticate using that replicated version of the Active Directory. Mm-hmm. So you would basically fail over the Active Directory into a network where you can get to from your application once it's in Azure and use that for authentication. For a partial failover similar to the 10th floor failover question that was asked, you assume that Active Directory is still available on premises and you route the authentication request to that.
So assumption is Active Directory in the Azure will keep running because...
Yes.
Active Directory replica is a running VM. So that's why I'm saying those are choices that you have to make, how you plan. So Azure is very, very robust, right? I mean, we're not using additional concepts. We're using Azure concepts. That's why we are first class within Azure. how you plan an app to run in Azure is the plan that comes as a result of the activity that consultants like Rohit help with, and that's what you have to do for various scenarios.
Yeah, and I would look it like that. When you take it in your enterprise or you speak to your customers, take it like an extension to your data center. Mm-hmm. Then it will make sense. Think out on that lines. And don't look at one application as a minuscule. Just look at the complete picture. The ASR is just like your jam station. I would look at it like that. Okay.
It's multiple times. So when you're doing between two sites, you can do storage replication.
In the storage replication, you should have the same kind of hardware.
If it's array-based replication, you need two similar arrays on two sites. So we that's a full 300 level session that I can have with you. But
no, we are in that session. Why?
No, the quick answer.
Let him complete his answer. I think then you will get your.
So when it's between two different sites where you're actually using storage replication, array-based replication, from EMC to NetApp to Huawei, we support providers for all of them through VMM.
Yeah.
So when you enable what's called a LUN level replication from ASR, there's a full experience to do that also. It lets you specify which LUNs are part of your storage and need to replicate for your workload together. There we also have multi-VM consistency through the LUN replication and synchronous replication.
Right.
When you're going to Azure, it's Hyper-V Replica, which is a host-based replication technology and not a storage-based replication technology.
Yeah. I'll just spend a few minutes on this one. Planning is critical, as I said. And this is from the real-life deployment scenario. All of it can be done in 5 days once you have done the planning properly. That's the key thing here. If the planning takes a day, a week, a month, that has to happen. And this is from a live environment. Validate the prerequisites, do a check VM, look at the configuration, ASR configuration protection of VM, and then finally the DR. And in terms of monitoring, it is very crucial. As the activity happens, how do you validate that? Through SCOM could be one way. What, as Abhishek mentioned, Hyper-V replica is the one of the underlying things. So SCOM has a Hyper-V management pack that can help you monitor the replica that is happening. Another thing could be you go to the Azure console, look at the jobs, look at the protection tab, and look at how the things are behaving. So as a whole, the fifth day is the crucial day when you will say, yes, I'm ready to sign up. Okay.
Now, is there a possibility, for example, if I have not planned this whole thing, and I have a VM, VMX file with myself, can I import it into the VHD file? I can import it to the system and use it. Is it possible?
I love this. You guys think that are almost released. So import-export is what we call it. When you do between your own data center sites, you can already support that. So you can actually export in a particular format and do an offline replication, what we call it. To Azure, the process is usually through import-export, where you actually ship the disk through the Azure channel. We are integrating with that very soon. So you
or the third option could be using the AZ copy or the...
AZ copy. But AZ copy, directly we don't recommend customers to copy the blob because things may not work accurately from a product support perspective. We actually recommend once the import-export is available, you'd basically export it to a disk, ship that disk to Azure. Azure will import it in. And your first initial replication, so that's the biggest part of your replication, it would be done through import-export or offline.
And BitLocker it as well.
For a couple of hours, that can be reduced a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
And BitLocker it as well.
Does this support VFTX?
Not yet.
Not
as Azure as a platform.
No, but I heard ASR alone has capability for VHDX.
No. So
in some cases, we have the ability based on the type of VM.
So
we can
most
convert.
We are using 22LR2. You are obviously using.
So we can convert and mount it as a VHD. But we defer to is the eventual Azure supportability statement.
Right. Not that add on onto the failover.
It would, of course, add to the time to failover because you have to convert also.
Yes.
You have to convert during the time of failover. Similarly, one other cool thing is coming.
So, we haven't come across this scenario where customer had 2012.
Yeah, so as you said, it is transparent to the customer. That's a back-end thing that happens, right? And second,
What was your solution? What
do
you have recommended?
So, for as a field consultant, I've been transparent to them. That's how it happens in the background. It is something that we tell them. would we have a VHDX support in? Right, right. Okay.
What the solution?
Your migration is one time job.
Yes.
Convert VHDX to VHD once migrated to Azure, okay, done.
Right.
But replication is an ongoing job.
Yeah. Right.
Right. So that means you are stuck with the VHD with all the limitations of VHD permanently.
And that's what I'm saying, right? Just because we can convert something does not mean VHDX is supported. It just means we can switch formats.
Yes.
Similar thing that we are doing, again, as early as next week, is being Azure currently does not support Gen 2 VMs. But a lot of our customers would like to fail over Gen 2 VMs. In that case, we are...
on a fly.
I'm getting a five-minute call. But a Gen 2 VM converted to Gen 1 while it is in failover and converting back to Gen 2 after a failover.
Any customers who had any reference... who are actually doing this conversion and then going?
Yeah, there are some customers. So to be very open, right now we have NTT Telecom, and that's a UK-based telecom company, NTT. Right?
What is the RTO or whatever?
So the I think more of it would be known to you, but I know they have a set of 50 VMs,
50 virtual machines,
50 virtual machines, IIS, Exchange servers.
They have done GRDL, so they are part of our...
I think that's documented on our...
So this basically, the five-day program that Rohit is talking about is the result of an actual field deployment. So our early adopter program involved five service providers across the world, helping them each protect 50 VMs running multiple workloads.
The reason I'm asking is to convince customers, when I bring the roadblock, maybe it's a roadblock for them saying ki ye process karna padega. Itself it's a project of 2-3 months for the planning and
Yeah, it's a one-time planning though, right? They would have done the same exercise for their on-premise data centers as well. I'm talking about another customer. I'm working with another customer in India, one of the top three customers in India. We can still not out, I can't name them, but one of the top three customers in India, wherein we're taking this technology for their public websites.
It's in progress.
Yeah, so it's going on as we speak. It can only be discussed on this kind of a forum once the activity is complete.
Cool. So you guys should compare notes on that offline. Do we have more questions?
Sure.
Considering we cannot name the customer.
Yeah.
So in fact, this... you want to take that away?
No, go ahead.
So in fact, the capacity planner said also what additional bandwidth may be required to do the replication. So.
Right.
And then the spreadsheet also tells you based on the churn what additional bandwidth would be required. And then of course, consulting services can give you more detailed guidance based on the various tools that they run during the evaluation window.
Right.
Any Azure support customer having file server is having one TB data and you want to replicate on Azure file server, what is the time it takes having to use bandwidth?
So currently we don't support replicating file servers as a whole. We are a VM-centric protection. Not a file server protection. So you can't just say that I want to protect a file server. We are either physical or virtual. So we are application based, not background or backend component based.
And if your question is just file server, look at DFS or DFSR.
I had one server, an Azure server, 2008. Now I want to transfer my server to Azure. Is possible?
Can you repeat your question? You have a...
I had one Exchange server 2008.
Exchange 2008.
Exchange is not supported on Azure.
Yeah, I think if you look at it, Exchange as a product team is... Okay. Whatever be the version, his question is, do I have an on-premise Exchange server? Do we support it going to Azure? From the product team, which is Exchange product team, they don't support it yet. But that's in the roadmap. That's what we saw.
Absolutely. So we're testing it. Our ability to fail over Exchange. Exchange itself is testing its ability to fail to run on Azure. There is no support for Exchange on Azure, so that failover or an Exchange deployment in Azure is not supported.
It might work, but it will not support it. It's not supported because it will be the Exchange support team who will take it up. And I think I see many Exchange consultants here, so you know why.
I'm saying in a production deployment, unless it is supported, it will not happen even for your customers, right? I mean, they will not deploy something that's not supported. Recovery plans, the reason we had that statement up there is that recovery plans is so powerful, it's your creativity that defines what can fail over. We tried out Exchange. We were able to fail over deployment of Exchange. Exchange team by itself needs to figure out how it wants to run on Azure and what the best practice on that is, and we'll defer to them.
Just not passing the buck. It's just that Exchange team, they are the experts of that application, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, let it come from product team.
No, but as I said, it's in the roadmap. So just wait for them to publish it as a validation test case, and then it will be supported.
Cool.
One question.
I think was,
Sorry. Next question.
Service or web server as a service. So DR plan will be sale, will be the same for services or?
No, this is not for. It's currently not integrated with those kind of offerings in Azure. It's for your on-premises workloads to fail over into Azure. Yeah, from your data center to Azure.
Yeah. Okay, we had a question.
Yeah, regarding that, I had a follow-up question. I believe in Exchange 2013, there is some sort of a DR concept with Azure.
So,
I
think we'll talk about it offline. We'll talk about it offline. Okay. And we have an Exchange consultant with us, so don't worry.
You're the Exchange consultant? Okay, good. So, okay. Yeah, talk to him. He's having a lot of offline conversations today.
I have a question, like, suppose I'm using Azure as a DR site. Uh-huh. So, when I'm synchronizing the VMs, and when they start in the virtual network on Azure, can I add those VMs, you know, to a cloud service?
Yeah, so actually what we do is our recovery plan automatically creates the cloud service for you. And puts the virtual machines inside that cloud service.
So can I use like traffic manager to redirect users?
Yeah.
To
yes,
cloud?
Yes.
That's
so
what I said.
That's what the demo we are doing.
My demo was actually using Azure Traffic Manager to redirect the traffic to the correct cloud service and everything, right. All the endpoints after it comes up.
Yeah.
So we are out of time.
We are out of time. I'll just move on.
Yeah. I think we are done with this, but whatever.
Right. I think the 5-day thing that we talked about, I had some screenshots for that. Monitoring is something key that I talked about. And another important thing, folks who have worked with Virtual Machine Manager, this would be a familiar tool. You can see there is a interface available for ASR as well.
It's a recent update. And from within ASR also, you can subscribe to email notifications for when things don't go right. You can also get an email to your administrator letting you know that things did not work correctly.
Yeah.
For SharePoint, I see that you have used always on. Is there any restriction that you should be doing it in cluster and monitoring as well, or it's
You can use whatever SQL supports its as its replication technology to Azure. We can integrate with that. Is
ASR on SQL?
Not directly on their how they enable replication, the geo replication that they enable with SQL. That's currently not available. Mm. But you could fail over that tier and do the other tiers via ASR and connect them back.
If I migrate some of my on-prem applications to PaaS-based solution. SQL PaaS and this kind of solution.
Uh-huh.
What you're saying is DR is not possible for those kind of things.
No, I'm saying DR for the other tiers. If you migrate your other tiers also to Azure, then you're already running in Azure. So that's an Azure to Azure
yes.
DR conversation, which will come at a later point of time.
But I have a question. Why would I think about PaaS DR, right? So it's Microsoft would have...
PaaS DR, Microsoft would take care of.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's why we talk about paired data centers and
right.
So
there, that's why you rely on geo redundancy of the actual offering itself.
Yeah, we have a question.
Yes, sir.
Pull the plug is a mandate.
Sorry.
And my setup has a heterogeneous setup. Certification is only some of the proprietary ones. Taking the example of that. If the solution is there, it can go in there. There are things.
See, for that you just need to profile the application. I think that's what we said. If an application as a whole cannot go because it has some components that cannot go to Azure, then that application is not a good candidate for it. Another important thing, should I have part of my component in Azure and part of my component in on-premise? I would still double-click on it. I would still, as a consultant architect, will not give you as a first choice of preference. Take it completely. Don't do it partially.
I know. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Can you switch this back to the projector?
Okay.
Yeah, we are done. So please give us feedback on what you liked in the session, what you didn't like. Scan the QR code or submit it through the app. We are available for a little time more if you have any questions outside. And actually, we do have
some giveaways.
Few giveaways. I know, sir, you were excellent. Thank you so much. So were you, sir. And appreciate your questions.
Yeah.
Gentlemen in the back, I hope you like Sachin Tendulkar.
And one for you.
That's
well.
A question that's self-answered.
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Sorry.
Appreciate the time.
Come forward to take this if you are Sachin Tendulkar's fan.